finding pregnancy support you can trust is worth celebrating. Getting it on sale is worth belting Beyonce in your car. That's right. Ritual's Black Friday sale is on. Support your body's new nutrient needs with their clinically backed prenatal multivitamin. Or give back to your gut with Natal Biotic, a probiotic supplement for trying, pregnancy, and postpartum to support digestive, vaginal, and baby's immune health. At Ritual, quality is top priority. All of their supplements are clean, third-party tested for heavy metals, and 100% made traceable. Because you deserve high-quality support at every stage of your pregnancy journey. Cut prices without cutting corners and get their best savings on their best supplements with 40% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pregnancy support. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge, and this is your latest Manchester United news this Tuesday, the 2nd of September. The transfer window is closed. The spin begins. I'm feeling a little bit dizzy. I'm like Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer. If you know, you know. But I am feeling dizzy from the spin, but we expected it. And the great thing about this community is we predict the things that are going to happen. I literally said last night, Manchester Evening News will drop a story this morning about future plans for transfers in January. And lo and behold, it dropped. We've also got an Athletic article, which is a bit spinny, but a bit not spinny. And Ruben Amorim's not happy. So we'll get into all of that this morning, plus get your thoughts in. I just want to start off by saying that what we do in this community is we don't follow spin, and we say how it is, but we're also very real. The transfer window is shut. We go with what we've got. I don't think Amorim's happy. In fact, I know he's not. I know that Omar Berada yesterday was making calls for midfielders, which we'll talk about in a moment. And I also know that in many ways, we're not in the worst position. There are clubs like Brentford probably looking at Man United and going, yeah, we've lost Wizard and Bermo, Norgard, Fleckin and our manager. And we've not really replaced them. So, you know, boo bloody who. Bournemouth might do the same. They've lost a lot of players. Aston Villa might look at Man United and go, you know, we were in the Champions League last year. We've not really done anything. At least you've spent £200 million. So look, it ain't like Amorim's walking around the streets homeless. He has had some investment and there has to be a return on that investment. But when you compare it to where we want to be, Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal, Man City, we haven't done the things we needed to do. So look, what I'm trying to say is, you know what I'm like. I said it when we lost the Europa League final, I said, that's going to be rock bottom. I woke up the next day and I felt liberated. I was like, well, here we are at rock bottom. The only way is up. Let's fight. Have we fought from that rock bottom? You know, I think we've made some mistakes. I think we've made some positives, but we are where we are. And I'm one of the first people to say, when you wake up the next day, are you going to keep moaning about it? Or are you going to go, well, come on then. Let's see your plan, because we can't do anything now. The window is shut. We are going to have to go with what we've got. You take a deep breath, you have a sleep, you wake up, and then you go with what you've got. I'm not happy with it, but I ain't going to keep moaning about it because it is what it is. We are where we are. Some people have it worse than us. Some clubs have it better than us. What is achievable now? So let's get into it. Lemens is now official, but I want to just dive straight into a few bits. Just on the midfielder, this is from our source. Man United were making calls for midfielders yesterday. Absolutely. The names will probably come out. Let me have a sip of coffee. The names will probably come out. But Berada was making calls up until 5 o'clock yesterday for midfielders. So when you get the Manchester Evening News leak, and we always knew this was going to happen, I will just read it to you because it's not been made up. Manchester United sources have said the midfield was never a priority due to already having options that the club view as strong and versatile. So this is from the Manchester Evening News this morning. Manchester United sources have said the midfield was never a priority due to already having options that the club views as strong and versatile. I mean, that story has got more holes in it than a hedgehog's lilo. It's sinking on its own bloody mattress. It's incredible that, I don't know whether that's made up by that paper. I don't know whether it's leaked from the club. But whoever has given that story is a prize idiot. Like, that's incredible to me. And there are more leaks this morning. There is more spin, but that is incredible. And we'll break it down, right? We'll break it down on fact. So the story is Man United are happy with their midfield because it's strong and versatile, and a midfield was never a priority. Okay, let's just break this down really easy without getting angry. So a midfielder was never a priority and we're happy with what we've got. We had five midfielders going into the summer. We've loaned one. So we've weakened our midfield. Mainoo wanted to go and we forced him to stay, wanted to go on loan. Tell me why that's strong and versatile when one wanted to go, one's been loaned and you brought nobody in. One's a number 10, one's about to retire in a year and one's confidence is low. Come on, that's nonsense. What was the second part of it? We never prioritised a midfielder. I must have dreamt Ruben Amorim publicly saying on the US tour that the midfield lacks intensity and speed. I must have dreamt that one. You know, it was early hours of the morning. Maybe I was hallucinating, but I think about 20,000 other people on that watch along must have been hallucinating as well. Thirdly, is David Ornstein a bullshitter? You know, is Fabrizio Romano a liar? Is Ben Jacobs full of shit? I mean, did we not spend 2 weeks negotiating a deal with Belaba, who, last time I checked, played in the midfield? So, and further to that, Omar Berada was making calls to midfielders desperately yesterday. So, for all that evidence, apparently we never prioritised the midfielder and we're really happy with it. And this is what you have to put up with. And I will just play the game a minute here. When we mock these journalists and outlets and the club and whoever leaks this spin, you call it what it is as spin, and people go, not everything's spin. Right, look, I know what spin is. I've worked in organisations who spin. It's part of the industry. If you get, let's say, Sir Jim Ratcliffe loses the America's Cup, that boat race thing, right? He has to do an interview after it. He's absolutely pissed off that they've not won. What's he going to say? What a load of shit. I've wasted all this money on a bunch of knobheads. What a wait. I'll never get them 4 years back and I'll never get all that money back. Absolute idiots. We've absolutely messed up. We're rubbish. Alternatively, at the end of the day, we are really proud of what we're achieving here. We're working towards something that we will achieve. You know, everything has gone really, really well. And ultimately, you know, it's just one of those things. You're always going to get the spin, because that's what companies that want to make money do. They're never going to expose the truth. So I expect the spin. The reality is we're not stakeholders. So we can be honest and say, come on, you can't be putting it out the next morning that you never wanted a midfielder when every bit of evidence shows that you did. Who were the midfielders that Omar Berada was talking about? Well, I could give you a name right now, but I'd be in a lot of trouble. All I'd say is I think he plays in Italy at the moment. And he's a midfielder, and I believe I've had him on a previous EFC, probably FIFA career mode. But we, you know, Ben Jacobs said we reached out to Conor Gallagher as well. Apparently we reached out to somebody from the Championship. So that's three straight away. Even if two of us are wrong, I doubt all three of us are wrong. So We were reaching out yesterday to midfielders. It wasn't Edison. Ineos counting on Lemens and Leon to make it to five signings, says Savage. Morning legends, disappointing window considering what other teams did, but there's nothing we can do now but to back the team and the manager. I literally said this in a chat this morning, Natty. Where we are this morning, I agree with you. You've got the Glinios Rimmers, who are basically telling you it's the best transfer window we've ever had. You've got the Amorim outers who are feasting on all the losses that are about to come. And then you've got us lot who are basically fastening ourselves in for the roller coaster that's coming where it's going to be up and down. I think there are three factions at United. Glinios Rimmers, Amorim outers, and then us lot. And I think all of us know that it's going to be a roller coaster season. I'm just fastening in for it. Like, you know, I hope all I want is Amorim to survive the season. My personal feeling is, can he survive the season? That's my honest take. And you should watch the show last night because we broke it down in such granular detail. It was a great show. You know, not everybody agreed, but it was a brilliant show. If you want a transfer review show, check out last night's show. It was brilliant from start to finish. I was watching it back last night. We just got into so much detail. I don't think anybody can argue we didn't miss anything from Bruno's sale to the lot, you know. But My big thing is I worry about Amrim, and my big thing is, can he survive the season? He has to survive the season. But is Amrim happy? Well, I will come back. No, I'll do the Amrim happy thing now. What worries me about Ruben Amrim is that he's very publicly made it very clear that he wanted a midfielder and he didn't get it. He's also very publicly threatened to quit twice. So you don't need to have a degree in psychology to know that Ruben Amrim is not going to be very happy. He's going to have to put a positive spin on it, like we all are, and he's going to have to get to work and deal with what he's got. Like I said, some managers in the Premier League have got it harder than him. Some managers have got it better than him. The difference between being a Brentford manager like Keith Andrews and having a very hard job is that Brentford fans don't expect them to finish in the top four and they don't have the media on their arse. Yes, there are managers in the Premier League that had worse windows than us. So, you know, Amrim can't cry poverty, but he also, no other manager, not even Pep Guardiola, not even Maresca, have the pressure that Ruben Amrim has. You could argue Arteta and Slot don't either. So when he doesn't get what he wants, he ends up scrutinised to a ridiculous level. So he's not going to be happy when you ask for something and you don't get it. But like that chef we spoke about at the start of the summer, who wants to cook a lasagna because he's a Michelin star chef who cooks lasagna, and then, you know, your owner turns up and says, we've got no mince, he's going to have to cook a vegetarian lasagna, isn't he? Is it going to be good enough without the mince? We'll have to wait and see. Vegetarians will be happy, but will the rest be happy? We're just going to have to wait and see how it pans out. But of course he ain't going to be happy because he didn't get everything that he needed. It's not Martinez, but we have to back Lemens, says Liam. I just want to say on Lemens, I'm getting sent so much stuff. He's our goalkeeper and we back him. I'm very consistent on this. I'm very honest. I didn't want Matic. I didn't like Matic, but I backed him. I wasn't particularly happy with Lukaku, but I backed him. I didn't like Fellaini, but I backed him. I might have got proved wrong on my reservations, but I still backed them until it was very obvious they were shite. But I ain't got a problem with Lemens. Like somebody said last night, you know, 2 weeks ago, you were very excited about this signing. And I didn't reply to it because I thought I'll just do it on the morning show. I was very excited 2 weeks ago. I was probably very excited 2 days ago. But if you offer me Martinez, I want Martinez. You know, I might be very, very happy with a car. And then if someone turns up on my drive and says, here's a better car, I'm not going to go, no, I'll stick with that one. That's what happened. I still like Lemens, but I think we had a better option and we didn't take it, in my opinion. You have a different opinion. That's fine. I want Lemens to do well. I see people saying he's shit. I see people saying he's going to be the next Courtois. I don't know. I don't even know if he'll start against Man City. I don't even know if he's going to be our starting goalkeeper. I hope he is, because Martinez would have been. So I want Lemens to be the starting goalkeeper. And I think I'm pronouncing his name wrong, by the way, because I don't think it is Lemens. So if anyone knows how you pronounce it, let me know. But I do look forward to seeing how it's going to pan out. But, you know, I certainly think he's a bit of a risk. David Mullen says Fellaini wasn't shite. He was absolute shite, mate. But unfortunately for you, it's 2025 and I'm not spending any more time talking about Fellaini. Those days are gone. Dragon Guide says the only way I accept the less amount of players bought in this window is if Ineos stick with Amrim the whole 3 years, irrespective of everything, says Dragon. I love that statement, mate. And I saw a few people saying it yesterday. If they're not going to back him in the window fully, they better fully back him over the season. Completely agree, but hypotheticals never work in reality. When you're getting pumped 7-0 by Liverpool, no one's going to sit there and go, well, they better keep backing him for the next 2 years, because quite rightly, we all live in the moment. And that's the problem. What if the bad results come, this hypothetical, they better back him for 2 years, will go in the bin. No one will think about it, because that's not how the football fan works. Now the transfer window is shut, where do you think we'll finish? Two injuries in the midfield and we'll be in serious trouble, says Daz. I think we are going to pick up injuries. I mean, that's another hypothetical, but we will pick them up, but we don't know where. I'm still pitching us between 5th and 10th. 7th is where I'm going for. I think Spurs and Newcastle are better than us, and obviously the top four. So I'm going to pitch us in at 7th at the moment. That some people might say that's a bit generous, but that's where I'm going now. Glazers spent almost 3 billion since 2005-06. We've been mismanaged, says the Burka. Pengers says that the Athletic are detailing a lot of the transfer window this morning. Hard to know all fact from fiction, but if it's true, the story about Onana arriving to pre-season seeking a contract bump, it's laughable. I've read a lot of that. I'm going to go through a lot of that now. I think some of it, you know, in all honesty, the Athletic are client journalism. They do that. And what that is, the clubs go, here's this, and they go, we'll put it out for you. But there is also an element of journalism as well. I think the Athletic is quite unique in the sense that they are client journalism, where they take information from the club and feed it out for them. But there is also sometimes an aspect of journalism where they go and get stuff themselves, or they'll cast an opinion themselves. So let's go through some of that, because I read some of it this morning and it was quite interesting. So first and foremost, let's start off with the midfielder. Ruben Amorim pushed for Belaiba internally, and Sir Jim Ratcliffe wanted Manchester United to try for him, but the club couldn't justify the price. At the start of talks, United sensed Brighton might be open to a sale in the ballpark of João Pedro's move to Chelsea for 60 million. United agreed personal terms with Belaiba, who was keen on the switch, having received positive messages from Onana, Mbeumo and Yoro. United are expected to return for Belaiba in the future. Well, look, straight away, that last sentence, you know, spin me around on the chair. It's spin. That last sentence is basically designed to distract your eyes from what went on yesterday. There is no one in the world that can guarantee we're going to sign Belaiba in January or the summer. And if you think that, you're ridiculously naive, in my opinion. And I'll explain why this happens after every transfer window. It's been happening for years. The window closes, you don't get what you want, and it comes out that next summer, we're going big. And nobody can tell me I'm lying, because I can go and find every article for you. Every year, when the window closes, the morning after, next summer, we're going to get this player. Next summer, we're going to get Ronaldo. Next summer, we're going to get Bale. It happens every single year. Also, it's very important to say that United are expected to return for Belaiba in the future. He's still going to be 100 million quid. He's still going to be out of your price range. So, you know, if you can't justify the price now, how do you justify it in a year? And also, other clubs will be looking at him in a year. The only reason we got a clear run at Belaiba was because Liverpool didn't need a midfielder, Arsenal had bought two midfielders, Man City had bought their midfielders, and Chelsea don't need midfielders. In a year's time, that might be different. And let's not forget PSG, Real Madrid, and everybody else. So we had a perfect storm to go for Belaiba, and we didn't do it because we couldn't justify the price. So whether it's Laurie Whitwell or David Ornstein or Fabrizio Romano or the Manchester Evening News, I'm sorry, in my opinion, you saying United are expected to go for him next year because United are briefing it to you, I would say, can we sit down and live in the real world? If you can't justify the price now, why would you justify it in a year? Mic drop, number one. Also, we had a clear run at him and we didn't do the deal. In a year or in January, all the other clubs will come in and that'll push the price up and the wage up. Mic drop number two. Mic drop number three. Oh, I remember this happening on February the 1st. With David Ornstein, saying we're in talks with Kenda, and everyone got excited and forgot the January transfer window. 5 weeks later, he's signing for Chelsea. So I don't, unfortunately, if you want to wake up and be positive and believe that we're going to get Belaiba, I think there's three really big points there that are not opinion-based, they're based on fact. So I don't believe that, to be honest with you, if I'm being honest. And I said honest three times. However, what I do focus in on is the fact that we agreed personal terms with Belaiba, the fact that we thought we could get him for 60 million, and the fact that we spent 2 weeks on that deal, on that amazing belief. I think that if we had £60 million to spend on Belaiba, why was that £60 million not spent on another midfielder? Because what I'm struggling to deal with is that, one, we thought Brighton would sell a midfielder for 60 million when they sold Casado for 100. Why would they give us a 50% reduction? So that's laughable. And two, where is that £60 million? Because it's not been spent. So where is it? That £60 million could have been spent on at least, well, I could say to you now, give me the Belabor deal crashes 3 weeks ago. Give me five names of midfielders I can go for in the final 3 weeks of the window for 60 million. And you would give me probably 15. So where's that 60 million gone? Are we seriously going to keep it in our pocket because we think we can get Belabor for the same price in a year? And how the hell did we go into that deal thinking we could get him for 60 because João Pedro went for 60? I mean, that's United for you. I mean, that the thing that jumps out to me is that we're now getting the explanation on the Belabor deal, and it is the explanation we feared. We genuinely thought we could get him for half price. Wow. That's mad. And also, when you look at United's negotiation this summer, and I think if you're a Glinios Rimmer, you need to leave because you're going to start crying. When you look at our negotiations this summer, can anybody tell me where we've done well? Because Mbeumo, 65 million after 7 weeks of negotiations. The top price paid. Cunha was a release clause, 62. We went to offer 60 for Belabor. Crap negotiations. Lemens, well, look, who knows? I don't know. 18 million for a Belgian goalkeeper. Is it too expensive? Is it not? I don't really care. It's not that much money. And Šeško, well, look, we paid probably the fair price for Šeško. So we haven't necessarily negotiated that well. Antony's price is probably a little bit low. Garnacho's price is very low. Rashford we didn't sell, Sancho we didn't sell. So I don't think we've negotiated particularly well this summer when you look at the prices. And going for 60 million for Belabor is incredible to me. How do you rate the new goalkeeper in terms of shot stopping, command of the box, footwork? Sorry, mate, I'm not seeing works, says John. I'm like you, John. I don't know. I mean, if there's anybody out there, we've had a few people who are apparently Belgian saying he's average. We've had, he's been analysed in Norway. They say he's shit. And then we've got a few people saying he's amazing. I don't know. I bloody hope he's good because I tell you what, there is no patience at Manchester United. So if he comes in and messes up in his first game, then he's going to, you know, confidence is key. I just hope he's got confidence. That's the thing. I think if we got Kenda, he would have signed two attacking midfielders and had 30 million extra for a midfielder or a goalkeeper. Window was ruined from the start, says Kai. Somnath says the culture did not change. Expected average to be good. Do we have to be patient with Lemens, says Visco. We do, but that's very hard. Very, very hard. Not for me, but, if we take our fan base as a whole, it's not patient, is it? Steg says, only three games in, but to play devil's advocate, we may have had a lucky escape with Belabor. He's been shocking so far. Go all in for Wharton next summer. Like the rest of Europe, mate. That's going to be a hard deal to do. I think what you make a good point of, though, is that when you look at Amorim's disappointment and try and justify it, I mean, I justify it, I'm sure many of you do, but if you can't justify Amorim's disappointment, look at it like this. Look at the first four games of the season, Arsenal, Fulham, Grimsby, and of course, the game against Burnley. All the problems in those games, forget the results, what are the problems in that game? So we've all seen the problems of the first four games. Amorim, you, I, and more importantly, the owners. They've seen those four games. Amorim's seen those four games. What have we done about it in the window? What have we done? After four games where we can see in 4K what the problems are, what have they done? Nothing. They haven't done anything. It's not speculation. It's not July. We've seen four games and they've done nothing. Well, obviously Lemens. We've spoken about Lemens, but and that's a conversation we can't talk about until we know whether we know he's starting or not. He might be a reserve goalkeeper, in which case they've done nothing. He might be going straight in, and in which case he's a young goalkeeper who hopefully can solve our goalkeeping issue. But they've done nothing. They've watched four games. They've watched Grimsby dominate our midfield. They've watched Burnley get two goals back against our midfield. They've watched the midfield cost us the goal against Fulham, and they've done nothing about it. And that will be massively disappointing for Amorim because he'll be able to say, look, I know I said I wanted a midfielder in pre-season, but you've seen the season. You've seen the problems and you've done nothing about it. It's depressing comparing us to Liverpool, says Dizzy. Liverpool are our biggest rivals, but we are turning into Everton. Everton's biggest rival is Liverpool, but they're not really anywhere near them. And we are becoming Everton because Liverpool are our biggest rival, but we're not anywhere near them. We're going to be rocking up to Anfield and Old Trafford as massive underdogs, hoping to beat our rival and give them a bloody nose. That we used to be better than them and we used to be on a level with them. But at the moment, we're just a long way behind them. Why don't we go for Camavinga? Market value of 60, probably 80. Play CDM and can do left back. Still young with experience. But Labour seems overpriced, this syndicate. I've never heard anything credible about Camavinga apart from when he went to Real Madrid. 2 months on Mbeumo, but ran out of time. Nice one, says Marius. Look, in the future, if I was giving feedback to Man United, you need to get people in who are better at valuing players. You can't turn up to Brighton and value him at £60 million. You also need to get people in who can work on more than one deal at a time. Because when you look through the window again, you can pinpoint, we stopped working on Mbeumo, we started working on Sesko. We stopped working on Sesko, we started working on a goalkeeper. We started on Cunha, then we went for Mbeumo. Every deal, there's never any overlap. It's like, bang, that's done. Let's do that. Let's do that. You know, you look at how Liverpool work, for example, they were working on three incomings at once at one time. You know, when you look at June, they had Kirkez, Frimpong and Verts that were all working on at the same time. Hi, Mark. Hope you're well. The summer window has been disappointing. Really hope you show some proper ambition in January. Love from Singapore, says P-Dog. I genuinely would say this to you. Stop thinking about January. Like, just get over, mourn and grieve for the summer transfer window. Stop thinking about the resurrection in January. Because do you think anything's changed at Man United with Glinios? I don't. So what do the Glazers do every January? They make you think they're going to do something up until about middle of December. And then they say, we don't like doing anything in January. There's more value in the summer. We're a club that likes to do it in the summer. So I wouldn't start thinking about anything happening in January. You've got the only thing that might happen in January is we might have a new manager. I think there's more chance of us changing our manager than doing business in January, to be honest. I'm afraid we finished 12th. We lost to Grimsby. Our goalkeeper situation will be more confused with Lament, who plays. Our defence midfield is ageing slowly, says Big Z. Dragon Guide, we've done that from you. Thank you very much for that. Vishvesh says, do you think the lack of an attempt to sign a midfielder in the last few days of the transfer window may be a sign that the ownership are unsure about Amrin's future at the club? No, I don't, Vishvesh, because we did. I know for a fact that United were making calls yesterday for midfielders. So despite this, we're comfortable with what we've got. We were making calls yesterday for midfielders, but it's too late. It's too late. Unless, I said this on Sunday. I said, look, you know, unless you're going to turn up to somebody and overpay, which we never will, no club's going to do a deal with you in the last 24 hours. They're not going to go, oh, it's Man United. Yeah, we'll weaken our team to help you. You've got to put proper money on the table if you leave it late. And we couldn't do that. When the Glazers give you lemons, let's make lemonade, says Rocker Bolton. The Glazers don't watch. They're only bothered when cup final or cash, says Dazzo. Ray Carl Brown Amore, legend, says all they really did was replace the forward line, not add players to it. No players added to the midfield and goalkeeper. I'm afraid the patient, because it very average window if we wanted Champions League football. Thank you, Ray. Well, I read this this morning. Somebody said, we're basically the team that finished 15th and got done over by Spurs with three new forwards. And, you know, it's hard to argue with that. We're basically the team that lost the Europa League final and finished 15th, apart from the front three. That's it. Mbeumo, Cunha and Sesko, and then the team that finished 15th. And that's quite a sobering thought. Of course, we've got to factor in Lemens, but he could well be not the starting goalkeeper. And if he is, we're going to have to be patient with him. Would Amrin buy pineapple in Mallorca, says Ibrahim. And Rishi says, considering 15th last season, would you have really expected us to buy the players we have while getting all deadwood in one window? 7 out of 10. Rishi, I mean, look, if you think it's a 7 out of 10 because of that, that's absolutely fine. But what deadwood have we got rid of? I don't class Rashford, Sancho and Antony as Deadwood, they weren't even here. Rashford, Sancho, Garnacho and Antony didn't even start the bloody final of the Europa League. And three of them didn't play at all from January. So if you want to get rid of Deadwood, that's not Deadwood. That's players that need to be moved on. Deadwood is the shit that actually sunk us. You know, Deadwood is the wood that you change on a boat because it's causing leaks and making you sink. Rashford, Antony and Sancho weren't even on the bloody boat. So yes, they needed to go, but that's not Deadwood to me. Deadwood is removing people like Casemiro. Deadwood is removing people, you know, who actually were in the team. Can't call players Deadwood that weren't even on the pitch. I agree they needed to go, but they didn't make us finish 15th. So I said it after the Europa League final. Like, that team needed dismantling. That team. Look at who started. That team needed dismantling. It's still here. We should have gone loan Angelo Stiller of Stuttgart. They wouldn't do that, PJ. Whoever just said the Glazers have spent over £1 billion since 05-06, Liverpool just spent half of that in one summer. So Scott, great point. Achilles, thank you very much for your super chat. Remind me of when we took the piss and offered Everton £30 million for Fellaini and Baines. Also that whole Fabregas saga from the same year, says WZU. Roro says, I wait this window as a 10 out of 100. Gotcha. Thank you very much for that. Okay, there are a couple of other bits for me to discuss here coming in. Also, I think it's from Laurie Whitwell, so this will be interesting. He says that, we'll come back to the Rasmus bit in a moment. Andre Onana, this will make you laugh. Andre Onana came back to Carrington wanting a new contract. He's been of the view that since receiving the standard 25% cut for non-qualification to the Champions League, a stance that did not go down well with Amorim. So Laurie Whitwell is saying that Andre Onana came back to Carrington this summer wanting a new contract because of the 25% cut he's received for not qualifying for the Champions League. This has not gone down well with Amorim. I think what I would say overarching with this is, and I need to like shout them out because they've been so good this summer and beyond, was that March international break, we had it that Amorim and Wilcox wanted Onana gone. Don't trust him, like him as an individual. The players don't trust him. Amorim wants his own guy. So the backdrop to this is that Amorim has always wanted Onana gone for a very long time. It wasn't because of this. So, look, that's separate. Amorim wanted to replace Onana a long, long time ago. But if Onana came back wanting a pay rise, you know, I'm not surprised, right? I'm not surprised. There's this thing on TikTok that I can't share. It's one of the best things I've ever seen. So when we were, I don't know what game it was, and I was going Prattman, right? Somebody has made a whole compilation on TikTok. Just search Goldbridge Prattman and you'll be watching it for about an hour because they've looped it. It's got all these mistakes and I'm going, Prattman, Prattman. It's very addictive and it's, but the volume of mistakes is incredible. So I'm not surprised if Andre Onana has come back asking for a pay rise, right? Even though the most logical person would say, how can you ask for a pay rise because we're not in the Champions League? When you're the reason we're not in the Champions League, how does that work? You know, that's like somebody, you know, burning your house down and then asking you to pay them for it. Like, it's madness. But it does make sense because if we're going to criticise Onana's inability to make good decisions and his inability to stop shots and come for crosses, basically, he ain't all there, is he, upstairs when it comes to decision-making? So coming back to pre-season asking for a pay rise probably fits in with this clown mentality and goal. In fact, it fits in really, really well. He clearly doesn't understand his shit, basically. He's never acknowledged in his career or nobody's ever told him that he's actually technically a really bad goalkeeper. And he's already on 140 grand a week, by the way. So, look, the guy's got no self-awareness at all. And I'm all for confidence. And I'm, especially in goalkeepers, you need to be self-assured and have self-belief. But if he's come back asking for a pay rise, it just tells you everything about, there are still personalities in that dressing room at Man United that need removing. And he won't be the only one. He won't be the only one. Shout out to the Only United, United Only WhatsApp group. I'll get that right, Caleb. Shout out to the United Only WhatsApp group. Thank you, pal. Shout out to you. Legends. Have you read the article on Sir Jim's Project 90, says Dimitri. I haven't read this, no. What's Project 90? Just give it me in bullet points. I'm like the chief executive. Give me your idea in bullet points. I've only got time for it. I'll tell you what I think. How many players in our current squad have been here for over 2 years? That's really the Deadwood, says Void. Look, if you wanted me to be really blunt about, somebody said, well, who's the Deadwood if it's not Rashford, etc. If you want me to be really blunt about who the Deadwood is in that team, obviously Onana, obviously Binda. You could argue Dalot, definitely Luke Shaw. Maguire's gone in a year. Casemiro, definitely. Bruno, if he's a midfielder. Agate at the end of this season, if he doesn't improve. But after 1 year, I'd remove him, to be fair. So I've got seven players there straight away. It's harder as you move into the attack, because that's where we've removed Garnacho, Rashford, Sancho, Anthony, Rasmus. Xerxes only been here a year. Cunha, Sesko and Mbeumo are new. Ahmad's definitely not Deadwood. Mount could be Deadwood, to be honest with you. I know he's had a good start to the season, but if he's injured again, he's Deadwood, isn't he? I think Mason Mount's a unique one. I always said he's a good player, but you've got to look at how many games he plays. He's Deadwood after 2 years if he can only play one game every, 2 months. So there's potentially eight there. Somebody said, what about Martinez? I mean, look, if Martinez comes back and gets injured again, same as Mount, he's Deadwood. I haven't said this for a long time, and it's amazing. There's two things Man United need that all top clubs have and we used to have. You've got to be ruthless in what you get rid of, and you've got to be aggressive in what you go and get. And if you've got those two things, you will be successful. I like Mason Mount as a player, and I really like Martinez, but if they're both injured again anytime soon, then you look at the last 2 years and you go, we'd be better off with a player that's not quite as good but is fit. You've got to stay fit. So, look, Mason Mount's been brilliant at the start of the season. His last 2 years have been terrible. If he's injured again and he's out for any longer than 2 weeks, then you've got to say the experiment is over. And in relation to Mason Mount as well, and this is not the Mason Mount show, absolutely, there are strong rumours out there that he can't play two games a week. And even if he plays one game a week, you've got to be very careful if you go near 90 minutes. Because he has an underlying problem that they can't fix. So, United probably bought Mbeumo and Cunha because Mount is a bonus ball. He's a sprinkling on the top of the cake. If he's available, great, but don't guarantee it. And that's from in the club. The reason we went for Mbeumo, the reason we've got so many number 10s is because Mason Mount isn't classed as a player in the club as someone you can rely on. If he's available and he stays fit for 2 or 3 months, you've won the lottery. But the reality is he's going to miss a lot of games, so you need to replace him. So that's sort of how we are with that. If he could stay fit, he ain't Deadwood. I'm seriously wondering at how thick the owners think we are. There are some in the fan base who are under their spell, but I can see what's missing, says Affy. Just got to think for yourself, mate. People always think differently. I don't see any of our goalkeepers commanding the box and stopping the crosses. The new kid won't get any respect. John, we'll leave it for a week, but I'm not actually convinced that Lemens will start against Man City. When you think about Sesko, he hasn't started a game yet, and we were all like, he needs to start against Arsenal. Remember, we were like, he's got to start against Arsenal. He's not even started against Burnley. So there'll be a lot of people saying Lemens has got to start. I'm convinced it'll be Binda. I'm convinced it'll be Binda against Man City. I don't think he'll start Lemens for a while. I think it'll be, you got to get used to the team. You got to get used to Carrington. That's what you got to do. In which case, we haven't solved the goalkeeping problem either. Whereas Emi Martinez would have started that game. And Anna could start silence. Yes, could. Have you done that one from Dimitri? Big Z says, I agree 4 out of 10. What would you rate if we sold Bruno and got Emi Martinez and Belaba? A 9. I'd definitely be north of an 8, Big Z. Yeah. Add on Casemiro exit and another midfield coming in. Well, we've got to, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't want to be part of the spin. Spin doctor. Yo, DJ, spin that wheel. I don't know. I don't want to do that. But ultimately, we have got to sign midfielders next summer because Casemiro will be gone. And I think Bruno will be gone. So we'll only have 2 midfielders and we play a midfield 2. So we need another 3. So next summer, we'll need to sign 2 midfielders minimum. Minimum. Otherwise, we're going to be in a bit of bother, really. There was also a story in The Athletic, which I must shout out because I know it's true for obvious reasons. And that's what I mean about The Athletic. Sometimes I think they're client journalism and some of it, I think they actually do journalism. So, you know, it is a bit of a mixed bag, unlike other outlets. But let me just grab the thing. Here it is. So part of, let me just get this. I want to do it in the right order. Rasmus Højlund was said to be heartbroken over the realisation his Old Trafford dream was over, especially when he started pre-season expecting to continue. Part of Rasmus's motivation to try and stay was that he considers himself to be better than Šeško. He felt that showing that in sessions might give Amrin pause for thought on his departure despite Šeško's arrival. So, look, there'll be a lot of people laughing about that, saying, you know, Rasmus has his chance, Šeško is better, etc. And I agree on both of those points, by the way. I also know for a fact that, you know, huge Man United fan, really, really devastated to leave. But you've got to applaud the swiftness of his exit because he could have said, I'm not going anywhere. And I think there was times up until even 3 weeks ago where he was expecting to stay at Manchester United, 100%. His desire was to stay and fight, and that's what he was going to do. And that was even when he'd been left out of the Arsenal and Fulham games. So he was of the opinion that he was not leaving this club. It was his dream club, and he wasn't going to go up until even 2 weeks ago. He was going to stay and fight, and he felt that with the window closing, a bit like Maynou, they can't sell me, they've got to use me. And I think that what actually happened is the message just kept coming through from Amrin that, you know, I'm not going to use you. I'm not going to use you. I'm not going to use you. And then fair play. He went, well, okay, look, you know, I can only bang my head against the brick wall so far. I'm going to go. And Napoli was obviously a much better option than AC Milan, who aren't even in Europe. So I think you've got to respect the fact that he desperately wanted to stay and fight. But I think you've also got to respect the fact that he, you know, he saw the wood for the trees and went, you know what, I'm not going to make this difficult. I'm not going to become a, you know, one of the bomb squads. I will go. And I think that's the story, isn't it? I don't think there's anything to add into there. Do I think that he had a rough run at United? Yes. I think being brought in at 20 years of age for 2 seasons with the worst creative attack we've ever had. I mean, God, whatever Šeško does, and I think he will be successful, he's got Mbeumo and Cunha behind him. Rasmus had Rashford, Antony, Garnacho, you know, the most selfish creators we've probably ever had. So I think if you flip it round, it could be Šeško that we bought 2 years ago and sold, and Rasmus was coming in. You know, I can understand that argument. But look, things like this happen. I wish him all the best at Napoli, and I think Šeško is going to do very, very well at Man United. And, you know, sometimes life's not fair, is it? You know, I think it was a very tough ask for Rasmus for 2 years. And I think Šeško's got a great opportunity, but he's going to Napoli. Napoli are one of the best teams in Europe. And Lukaku is injured. So he's only 22. In a year and a half's time, he might be coming back to the Premier League for 50, 60 million again. Like, you just don't know what's going to happen. If he doesn't achieve at Napoli, then maybe he's not the striker many of us thought he was. If he goes to Napoli and does well in the Champions League and Napoli, then, you know, maybe it was just circumstance of being thrown in at the deep end with a crap attack. We'll find out. And it's one I'm very interested to monitor. But I do think that it might be, I hope it's not, but it could be a hidden mistake. Not taking the money for Bruno and playing him in the midfield is not a hidden mistake. Everybody knows it. But removing Rasmus to generate funds for Lemens, because you can't generate money anywhere else, might be a mistake if Šeško fails or gets injured. Because I think we're light up front. I do think we're light up front. I think that we're light in the midfield, we're light in the wing backs, and we're light up front. And if Šeško gets injured, we're going to be using Xerxes or Mbeumo or Cunha as our striker. And for me, they are false nines. So I do think that Šeško will do well, but if he gets any sort of injury, I think we're short. And that's an indication of where Man United are, really. We're not ready to be what we can be because we don't have the resources for whatever reason. We're light in the midfield, we're light at wing back, and we're light up front. And we could have kept Rasmus and not been light up front, but we didn't, because I think the club said, we're not in Europe, we're not able to carry the squads that Liverpool and Arsenal do. So when you look at it, we've reduced our squad because we're not in Europe. And some people would say that's right, and some people would say it's wrong. But when you reduce your squad, you run the risk. If you look at Aston Villa, if they lose a couple of players, they're going to be in the same position as us. And I think there's a few clubs that are light. I mean, look, even Liverpool are light at centre-back now because they didn't get Gueye. So it is what it is. But I do wish Rasmus all the best. Garnacho, no. Rashford, yes. Sancho, I don't even care. It might not do as bad if Sancho does well at Villa, so I don't even care. Antony at Betis, I don't care. We're never going to bring him back. He's a very selfish individual, and he's proved that at Ajax and Man United, but I don't really wish him, you know, I don't wish he doesn't do well. I just, you know, he'll never be a United player again. That's it. That's the window closed. Wild Coaster says, if Lemens flops, we have Vitek next season. And Abby says, since 05, how many seasons was our centre midfield squad actually stacked with world-class players, says Abby. I said this last night. There was a list, and I can't bloody find it. There was a list of every midfielder we've signed since 06 and every midfielder that Liverpool have signed since 06. Not only is Liverpool's list about double, you look through the quality and you just go, why have we neglected that for 20 years? It literally coincides with the Glazers coming in. But the Glazers know nothing about football. So the Glazers wouldn't come in and go, I hate midfielders. We're not buying midfielders. But it literally coincides with the Glazers coming in and our absolute ignorance of the midfield. The place where games are won and lost. And we've ignored it and neglected it for 20 years. We should sign Van de Ven, Jungmann and Wharton next year, says Dragon Guide. Afi says, thank you very much for that. We've read that one before. Appreciate it. Imagine having a Park Ji-sun or an Anderson in the middle of the park again, says Daniel Barnes. Do you still stand by your original Man United prediction of fifth, says On? No, but look, it's cooked in, it's baked. I said fifth place. I can't move away from that because it's pre-season Premier League predictions. The problem with pre-season Premier League predictions is there is still a transfer window which will change that. So my pre-season prediction was definitely fifth. My post-transfer window prediction is seventh. I feel that Villa and Newcastle are now ahead of us considerably. Obviously, they've both got to play Champions League football. We'll have to wait and see if that happens. But I still stand by the fact that until game 10, our season doesn't start. I think we're still going to be adjusting, adapting, bedding in players. And it's not really till game week 10 where the European teams start getting used to having to do that. Like, we're going to have a whole week off. So, which will actually increase the pressure on Amorim. We don't know that having a whole week off is going to be a good thing. You know, some people think having a whole week off means we're going to blitz team with intensity and you know, energy. Okay, well, we'll be able to compare that because we can now get running data for every game. But also, a lot of these players are used to playing two games a week. Bruno, Maguire, Casemiro, they might become quite lax. It could work the other way. They might be like, they might find it problematic not playing two games a week. So, and also, it doesn't matter how quick you run, if you're not good enough, you're not good enough, are you? So it's going to be very interesting to see, but I don't think we're going to see the benefit or downside of that until game week 10. And as we know, after every loss, it's going to be chaos because the pylon will be there, of course. Would you bring Collier back from loan, says Fricks? No, we won't be doing that, and we shouldn't do that. We won't do anything about that. Amazing Grace, lovely name, says, you are spot on. They are always telling us they will go big the next transfer window, but we know what they will do next January. It will be FFP and PSR. Yeah, I don't think we'll have any money in January. I would argue that we probably... The only way you'd get Belaba for £60 million in January is if he was shit between now and January. You know, if he plays well, they're not going to drop the price. And this is what makes me laugh. We offered 60, they want 100. If he plays well, they're not going to go, oh, we've reduced it now. They're going to go, it's 110. So I just, you can swallow the spin if you want. I don't like the taste. Right. Thanks everyone for watching. Stay safe. Take care. We are back in the studio at 2:00. And of course, the 8:00 shows have been so good. I can't wait for it tonight. So thank you very much for tuning in for those. Make sure you smash a like and subscribe. Lots and lots planned over the next week or so as we build up towards the return of the Premier League. But loads of stuff's been parked conversation-wise. I don't want to give too much away because I'll spoil it. But lots of stuff has been parked because of the relentless nature of the transfer window. So it's about to get really good and very, very interactive. So make sure you tune in at 8:00 tonight. I'll speak to you in a bit. Take care. Stay safe. Oh, one other thing. Binda or Onana will be gone by the time we play Man City. Watch this space.